Headlines.
Live from Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. On the left, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And on the right, I am the new White House Director of I've been fired. I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
Welcome to the most disruptive show in America, Fault Lines, with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one, retired four-star General John Kelly takes over as White House Chief of Staff, and in his first move, Trump's got 99 problems, but a mooch ain't one.
There we go. Well done. Well done.
Round two, bipartisan support for legislation aimed at those participating in an international boycott of Israel is under fire by the ACLU and prominent Jewish organizations such as J Street and the Anti-Defamation League, who are describing it as an assault on First Amendment rights. And in round three, Russia retaliates against U.S. diplomatic sanctions and reduces U.S. diplomatic numbers to 455, matching the number of Russian diplomats working in the U.S. That's all coming up and more on today's episode of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan and the Mooch. I figured he's looking for work. What the heck? We got an open seat here. Why not?
We should go over. The studio is only about two blocks from the White House. We're only about two blocks from the White House. And whenever I walk over there, because I walk by there all the time, invariably somebody asks me for a dollar. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly right.
There's a lot of people. We used to call them bums. I think that was, I'm not sure. It's homeless now, but the bums was what we used to call them. And he was one of them recently.
Yeah, right.
I was walking over to the studio today. He asked me to borrow
a fellow American who's down on his luck. Did he kind of hit you with that?
Let's point out how his week has gone, though. Well, let's just point out the roller coaster ride he's been on, because at the end of Friday's show, we mentioned that his wife had also just filed for divorce.
Yeah.
So that was Friday.
He had a baby son, I believe, which he wasn't present for the birth, but he called like 4 days later. I mean, you know, you got to give him credit for that.
Well, also, he said some very nasty stuff about the baby. Let's point this out. He called a reporter and said that the baby was very selfish, was crying all the time. No, he didn't do any of that, but he didn't.
That's about the only person he didn't criticize was the baby. And I guess because, you know, he ran out of time. He ran out of expletives. So what happens with the mooch? So today, John Kelly, it was sworn in. The last great hurrah of the mooch is to overshadow John Kelly, who's the new White House Chief of Staff.
Well, here's the thing, Garland. You actually did once again call this. I'm going to give you credit. On Friday, you were like, he's got to go. And you were just like, any sane person would think that he's got to go. And the thing about Kelly is he clearly is a sane person. And the other thing, and I mentioned this in the Periscope I just did. Oh, hey, by the way, let's just get all this stuff out of the way. If you're listening to us on 105.5 FM inside the Beltway, you should tell your friends. But also, you can check us out after the show is over. You can listen to replays on iTunes, on Spreaker, and you can watch us live on Facebook Live right now if you'd like to see what radio looks like, or on Periscope right now. Hi, Periscope.
At Stranahan.
Just check it out, at Stranahan.
And on Facebook, just go to the Sputnik News Agency's page, and we are right there live, and you can watch it, and you can share it with your friends.
And I'm going to tell you to retweet it and share it, because I do think we're the most disruptive radio show in America. By the way, there's a guy who's people are doing analysis of the show now.
Really?
Did you see
that? Well, the Mooch is going to have some time on his hand. Maybe he'll do an analysis of the show.
Now, it was critical of you. So I liked it.
Good.
But no, I like the fact that we're getting sort of like a secondary wave of stuff off of the show, which I enjoy. So thanks very much to everybody.
Kind of what they refer to in the military as a blast wave off of the show. We got a blast wave.
That's right. Now, what I said on the Periscope on the way over, two quick things. Number one, Sean Spicer was right. And people are loath to admit it. But Sean Spicer was right. Sean Spicer quit. Remember why he quit. Sean Spicer quit saying, I don't think this guy's cut out for the job. He doesn't have the experience, and I think he'll be a loose cannon, is basically
I would guess
what Spicer said.
I would guess the words he used in private were a little more, a little different than that, wouldn't you?
But I know, I agree, and I'm saying, so A, let's give Sean Spicer a little bit of a credit there, but that's it. By the way, that's the sound of all the applause in D.C. for Sean Spicer, is that right there.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, though, is that I think Kelly's going to come back with somebody who is possibly military experience. You know, those military people who do press conferences, they're pretty good at it. They're pretty no-nonsense.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah, straightforward.
They remind me of, you were in law enforcement, Garland. Yeah. Of course, you were in law enforcement for a long time. And I think that's what, this is a serious move. In other words, Kelly knows coming in, firing a guy who just came into the office 10 days before, he knows that's a serious move. So the immediate, I think what he did was just look at it and go, okay, he had the weekend to think it over, right? It was announced on Friday afternoon that he'd be taking over. And I think he just realized, okay, let's get the pain out of the way right away. Let's not let it drag on for a week.
I'll give you an alternative that I said. Here's what I thought. Because if you're a guy that's coming from the military, or I was in law enforcement, quasi-military or whatever, and I've seen this kind of thing happen when someone was going to get promoted in law enforcement, right?
Yeah.
Where somebody would say, look, we got a real problem over at the academy, right? The police, I ran the police academy. I'm not saying it was me, but I've seen this kind of thing happen. So we got a problem over there at the academy, and we'd like you to go over to the academy. We know you got a spot where you're like it, but we could like you to go over to the academy and clean this mess up. And the guy who's requested to go over to the academy says, I'll go to the academy, but this guy's got to go. The only way I'm going to take it is if he ain't there when I get there. So that's, I'm not saying that happened, but I'm saying a guy like Kelly, who is a person, because what does a military person want to do immediately? Establish a chain of command.
It's
That's DNA of a military person to say, chain of command, who reports to who speaks to who has to get permission. And I would think to me that one option is Kelly says, I'm going to clean house when I get there. The other option is he says to Trump, look, I'll take this, but I ain't coming in if the mooch is running around here, you know, attacking everybody that he worked with every day, and that we can't coexist. I can't coexist with the mooch. That's what I'm thinking about Kelly.
Well, I think the thing is he doesn't want shenanigans, right?
Right.
And the mooch is, like I say, I miss him already.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like
Saturday Night Live, they're crying in their soup today. Darn, there goes the whole show for Friday. Saturday
I said
night.
It on Friday, like it's, he's making my life easier. He's making my life as a radio host easier. Although I did, anyone can listen to it on Friday. I guess I'm glad he's gone before I went back to the White House, because I did kind of blast him one on the Friday show for the way he went after Bannon. I will tell you this, though. Bannon, who, you know, is a guy who I know well, obviously. And by the way, I already did send him something saying, look, where do I send my resume? I already texted Steve Bannon that, so but I haven't heard anything. But Bannon's a guy who doesn't like shenanigans either. And got a very low tolerance for this. And so I just think it's a better move. Now, who's it a bad move for? I got to say, I think it's kind of a bad move for the Kushner.
They recommended him, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, here's the other part.
Good job, guys.
He came in, and this is the thing. He's here like quick, and he pretty much whacks a couple guys. You know, he's almost kind of like a political hitman. He comes in, Spicer and Priebus are done. And then he's gone that quick, you know, so it didn't really work out well for Spicer and Priebus. I mean, even though I think it may have been voluntary on both of those guys. Now that you look at Priebus, you think at this and you look at the entirety of the situation, you think to yourself, you know, if you have any options at all in the world and you're working with this guy, you say, I quit. I ain't working with this moron.
Well,
and I think Priebus might have done. Definitely Spicer did it. But
Spicer did it for sure. Now, Priebus, what was interesting was, I'll tell you what this whole thing reminds me of, Garland. I used to work on the TV show Access Hollywood as a graphic artist, about 5 years on Access Hollywood. And one night, and this shows when I worked there, and it's like 10 years ago now. One night, it was on a Friday, and I remember it very distinctly because everyone had gone home for the weekend, and suddenly we heard Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston broke up. Remember when Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston were a couple?
Yep.
Well, I remember when they broke up, because when you work on Access Hollywood, that's the biggest story in the world. That's right. Like nuclear war has been declared. That would be So we all had to like everyone was literally, we were walking to the parking lot. Work week is over. Boom. So on Friday, we finished the show. We walk out of the, here's what happened. This is, I'm just taking you inside the life of a radio talk show host. So we get out of the studio and like Priebus is gone. What? And I was like, I wanted to come back in and do some more radio. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right, yeah.
But the show was over and they don't let us do that. Plus Garland's got another show that he hosts later on Friday.
And I got to talk about Priebus. So I got to do it.
You got to do it anyway.
Well, thank God for, Twitter and Facebook and Periscope so you could at least get something out of it.
We got something up right away at populist.tv, which is my site. We got something up right away about it. But, here's the thing about Priebus. Now, what's it? Because we haven't even talked about that. We were going to talk about Priebus, but suddenly Mooch comes in. Here's what was interesting that Priebus did on Friday night. He immediately went to CNN and was very praiseworthy of Trump, which I think is...
That's professionalism, though, to me. That's professionalism.
It is professionalism, but I think it shows, believe it or not, a problem with Priebus, which is this. This is a problem with him. Priebus is a guy, and by the way, I get it. When you ran the RNC, your job was to get along with everybody. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, that's a job requirement. Unlike the DNC, which I'm not even trying to blast you, Garland. You know, you're a liberal, but you're not a Hillary.
I'm a progressive.
You're a progressive, right. And by the way, that's a distinction.
If you're in charge of the DNC, then your job is to shaft the Bernie people.
No, that's exactly
job.
Right.
They pay you to do it. You got to do that.
What I'm saying is Reince, when he was more, the RNC was more fair to all of their candidates. That's what I'm saying. The DNC was clearly
fair
a Clinton
candidate. So that was a low bar for the RNC.
No, it was. But Reince, the problem is that ability to get along with people did not serve him particularly well as chief of staff, especially when it came to a very hostile press and people in Congress who needed to be, quite frankly, wrangled. See, that was why.
No, I would say this, though.
McConnell and Ryan needed to be brought into the tent.
I would say this. It certainly, under these circumstances, also depends on the administration. For instance, a low-key guy like Mike Pence, who is an establishment kind of guy, then Ryan Priebus would have fit in very well, I believe, in the type of dynamic that would be in a Mike Pence, you know, or a John Kasich White House, but in a Trump White House.
Funny you should mention that. Did you see what the Spicer said about Mike Pence today?
No, what'd he say?
He said, it's funny you should mention that. Sean Spicer said, well, obviously I would like to be in a Mike Pence administration.
If he runs in 2020.
But let me point out something about Kasich, loser, and Mike Pence, vice president, loser. I mean, I'm glad. In a sense, I don't want to diss the guy because Trump chose him. On the other hand, if Trump had not chosen him, his name would be Mike who? Nobody would have any idea who Mike Pence is. Mike Pence is not a political player. And for Sean Spicer to act like, well, he might be a contender. No, 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 no. It shows exactly what's wrong with Spicer. It shows exactly what's wrong with Priebus. They want these milquetoast like Kasich. Kasich, I mean, I made this joke during one of the debates. I said, what is Kasich running for, like, Sunday school youth counselor? That's what he was in the debate.
Well, see, the thing about it, my point with them was that what I mean is they wouldn't be, they're not bombastic. You know what I mean?
I know.
Now.
That's why they're losers.
Right. So, and I would argue you're probably right because they're political insiders in a dynamic, in an election cycle, the last two election cycles, one could make the point, where insiders were not going to win. Where
that's
people
right.
were looking for outsiders, that's why Trump won. What happens next? I have a feeling, this is what I'm telling you, don't forget Garland said this, in 2018 and 2020, keep your eye on the independents. I think people are going to, and both parties are going to start looking at the independents. I think there are a lot of people, you've got a core group of Trump supporters, but I still believe that there are people who kind of lean establishment Republican, who voted for Trump, who now are looking at the dynamics in the Trump administration and saying, A, that's a little more outlandish than I'd expected, a little more. And B, that they're unhappy with the guy you know, filling. Let's face it, for all the craziness we talk about the Mooch, he was still a one of the Wall Streeters. And there are a lot of people, I suspect, that were Trump supporters that are still looking at him saying, you know what, in the same way that the Bernie supporters backed away from the establishment, from the Hillary people, and said, look, we cannot believe that you can take all the money from Wall Street, that you can fill your money with Wall Streeters. I mean, fill your cabinet with Wall Streeters. And we cannot believe that you can do that and still be on the side of the working person. I bet there is a lot of people who voted for Trump who are looking at him saying the same thing. I cannot believe that you can fill your cabinet with people from Wall Street
It's too early. You got to understand. Trump supporters supported Trump. And the reason they supported Trump, it's 6 months in, they know that Trump has gotten a lousy deal. Not a lousy deal, it's beyond that. He's dealing with press who act like the enemy and who, in fact, are the enemy. So I'm telling you, Trump supporters are looking at this going, you know what? The guy's been in the job 6 months under the most hostile possible circumstances. I'm going to see what the guy's results are. And quite frankly, Trump is getting zero credit for accomplishments. And I know you can crack a joke, but the fact is he has accomplished things and he has delivered on stuff. The economy is already on the upswing in a way that was predicted it would never possibly do. Oh, there's no way we're going to get 3% GDP growth. That's already happening. He already fulfilled his promise in the Supreme Court. And a lot of Trump supporters are looking at the weasels like McConnell and, quite frankly, like Reince Priebus's buddy, Paul Ryan, and looking at those guys like they're the traitors. One other thing, you talked about independent.
Well, before you, let me say one thing about the economy, and that is this. You know, I don't fault any politician. If you're in for one day and the economy goes through the roof, you're going to say it's because I got elected yesterday. But the fact of the matter is this. Trump hasn't gotten anything through Congress. Zero.
That's not true.
A guy who can't get anything through Congress is responsible for.
That's not true that he's not gotten anything through Congress.
8 months into, excuse me, it started, what, maybe 3 or 4 months in where the economy started roaring? He came in January, end of January, the economy really started firing up, what, March, April?
No, it happened when he got elected because business people realized that they did not have an anti-business administration in the House. And as much as Obama is a corporatist in some ways, the fact is he's got the heart and soul of a socialist. That's the reality. That's who his heroes are.
I don't blame Trump for taking, look, I don't blame any, that's normal. I don't blame him for taking responsibility, for taking credit for something that's happening. But the fact is, I'd be hard-pressed to believe he had anything to do with it. But at any rate.
I got one other thing that I'm going to point out here. Kid Rock is talking about running for Senate. We talked about indies. And he's got a tweet. I'm not going to say exactly what he said, but basically it's, wheels up, Mother Hubbard. I'm going to go with that.
Oh, gosh. We're going to go and we're going to talk about policy and legislation in round two. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome to round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. So we've got bipartisan support for legislation to address an issue called BDS, which is Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. For those of you who don't know what that is, basically there is a kind of an international movement that some people have put together that are people that are upset with things that are going on in Israel. And one of the ways that they're attempting to address it is boycott, divestment, and sanction of particular companies. Okay. Regardless of how you feel about Israel or not, there's another issue going on here. Cause what's happened is there's a Ben Cardin and, there are a number of Democrats, Ted Cruz, Kirsten Gillibrand, a number of Democrats have, and Republicans have put forth legislation. And basically what the legislation would do would be to criminalize support for boycott, divestment, and sanction. There would be a fine minimum of $250,000, maximum of $1 million, that for supporting the BDS movement. There would be up to 20 years of incarceration for that. So there are a number of organizations, including the ACLU, including the Anti-Defamation League, the left-wing, very well-known left-wing Jewish organization called J Street, who have come out against it. And let me, real quick, before we get into it, let me give you the AC.
Wait, what did you say it's called?
J Street. Familiar with J Street?
J Street. Okay, yeah. I thought I misheard that.
Yeah, so a couple of things. So one of the things that the ACLU has brought up here, a couple of the issues. By the way, the minimum civil penalty for violating prohibition, $250,000, the ceiling maximum of $1 million and 20 years in prison. So a couple of the things. One of the things that the ACLU brought up is history, the right to boycott, right? And they're saying, they brought in a couple instances. Number one, the American Revolution was founded on boycotts against British goods to protest excise taxes. The Montgomery bus boycott of 1955-1956 wasn't well-known because during the civil rights movement. Of course, there was the boycott and divestment movement against South Africa. And there's a landmark court decision, NAACP versus Claiborne Hardware, where there was a mass economic boycott of businesses in Port Gibson, Mississippi, where Jim Crow laws were enacted and the people there were unhappy with them. And one of the things that was found in that was that one of the justices wrote that the right to boycott rests on the highest rung of the hierarchy of First Amendment values. And with the ACLU, one of the issues, the things that they brought up, and I didn't think about it, was this, that if you were to say, I'm a neo-Nazi and I don't like Jews and I'm going to boycott Israel's businesses because I'm a neo-Nazi and I don't like Jews, it wouldn't apply to you. So, if you're driven by anti-Semitism, you wouldn't be violating the statute. Because it's built around another, built kind of around another statute. But the bottom line is, which means this, the same act is criminalized only based on your political motivation for carrying out the act. And here's my point, and this is, to me, something I always believe in. Nothing makes a tree grow like pruning it. The fact of the matter here is the people who are pushing for this anti-BDS legislation don't realize that paradoxically, they are going to make it grow. The worst thing you can do is tell people they can't do something. To tell Americans, if you do this, if you think this, if you say this, you're going to go to prison. And people will suddenly say, well, what is this that I can't think about or say or believe? It's just a great paradox. It has nothing to do with Israel. To me, it's a First Amendment issue. Am I right? Do you think it's a First Amendment issue, Lee?
Kind of.
All right. I like that. That means you got somewhere to go with that.
Kind of. First off, and by the way, joke alert. First off, I got to say that Anthony Weiner, the former U.S. congressman, was so upset about this, he thought he would get back into Congress to fight this. Then he found out it was not an anti-BDSM bill. completely different. Something completely different that we won't get into because my son is here. Something completely different. Joke alert over. Okay, so here's the thing about this, Garland. By the way, that was a joke. But for you driving, listening to 105.5 FM.
Don't forget to tip your bartenders.
Don't forget to tip your bartenders and don't crash into something. Okay, so here's the thing about this. First off, let's talk about what Cardin. So this is introduced by a couple senators, Cardin and Portman, and this is their response to it. I'm just gonna read what their letter says. Nothing in the bill restricts constitutionally protected free speech or limits criticism of Israel and its policies. Instead, it is narrowly targeted at commercial activity and is based on current law that's constitutionally upheld. And what they're saying is that companies are still free to boycott Israel. They're still free to criticize Israel. But what they can't do is participate in another international organization's boycott, such as providing information to the U.S. Human Rights Council on an Israeli company that's dealing with in the settlements, for instance. Now, that's why I say kind of, because to me, first off, I think the ACLU is being dishonest in the way that they're pitching this. I think that you can still go, well, this is what it says, and still be like, you know, that might be a First Amendment thing. But let me say something about the BDSM.
BDSM. Oh no, God. Let's not talk about the BDSM on this movement.
Let's talk about the BDS movement in general. Let's talk about that for a second, because the BDS movement is something that I've been tracking for years. And before we talk about the First Amendment, let's talk about who's pushing it. Islamist, that's who's pushing it. It's being pushed across the country by a group that's founded by the Muslim World League, which is a Saudi Arabian organization, called the Muslim Students Association. The Muslim Students Association is the largest group, the largest pro-Islamic group on college campuses across the country, and has been since it was founded in 1963. And they are the primary people pushing this across the country and Canada. And they've been pushing this. And they do it through things like another dishonest thing, what they call Israeli Apartheid Week. That's something that they do. And by the way, people in South Africa are offended by that and are like, no, it's not the same thing at all. That's what you're trying to do. So the BDS movement is frankly disgusting. And I'm going to be critical of that. And for these people, if you're an Islamist who's talking about murdering people who are critical or draw a picture of Muhammad, don't talk to me about the First Amendment. You know what? I never see these people jump up and yapping when there's a death sentence put on the guys from South Park for depicting the Prophet Muhammad. So again, you know what? Cry your little crocodile tears about the First Amendment somewhere else, in my opinion, because you guys don't give a hoot about the First Amendment at all, unless it suits your purposes. And so that's what bothers me.
Okay,
here.
I will give you. Okay,
so I don't know where the ACLU. I don't know where the ACLU came down.
So here's how I rebut that. When I was with the ACLU, when I was still am on the board of Maryland, you know, one of the things we did, the KKK applied, we did them more than, but I'll just give them one. They applied for a permit. They didn't want to get, people didn't want to give them a permit. And we said, it doesn't matter if it's KKK, First Amendment. So here's my point. If you care about the Constitution, you're about what, not whom. See, here's if the Constitution.
Oh, I agree.
Is about, let me add this. The thing about the Constitution is this. The First Amendment protects, and I've said this a bunch of times, and if you care about the First Amendment, this should be the issue that you always remember. You do not need the First Amendment to protect popular speech. You don't need the First Amendment. Nobody's going to lock you up for standing on the corner of 16th and K saying America is the greatest country in the world. The First Amendment was put here wisely by the founding fathers because they wanted an environment where you could have unpopular speech and where they would create a dynamic where unpopular speech and unpopular groups. Remember, you can't go after, you can't restrict a group's speech for their views. So, you know, regardless of which groups, you and I are going to disagree on the various groups, and that, but the groups are irrelevant. The First Amendment is what's important here. And my thing is this, boycotting is someone's right. And you're going to tell me you're going to tell me and my company if you boycott because
that's not what it
you're
says,
going
though,
along, if you're
Garland.
Going along with BDS, if you go along with them, if you go along with the UNHR or some of these other international organizations that are BDHS, then you're going to jail and you're going to get 20 years and you're going to get a million. But if that guy over there just says, well, you know, I hate Jews, so I'm not buying stuff, he gets nothing. That is a clear violation of the First Amendment. And that is unfair. So the guy can stand over there with his Hitler uniform on and say, I'm just not going to buy anything because I don't like Jews. And I can say, I absolutely disagree with anti-Semitism, but let's say I have I do it, you know, in this particular instance, my company does it for other reasons. We go to jail. I think that is an absolute violation of the First Amendment.
So then according to that, the ACLU should have been on the side of people who said, you know what? We're Christians. We own a bakery. We don't want to bake a cake. They should be on the side of those people,
no,
right?
Because not necessarily.
No, wait. So wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Those two aren't even related.
What do you mean they're not related?
Here.
If you have a company and you decide to boycott Israel, that's okay, right? But if you're a Christian,
you have boycott
if you're
anybody
a Christian
you want to.
And you decide to boycott a gay wedding, you're say,
or you're, let's just say, a racist, and you decide to boycott black people because you own a business. We have a public accommodations law.
Let's say you are.
Public accommodations.
So,
public accommodations law. So that's the law you got to go by. So I believe people have to go by the law.
So you're okay with it being applied in some cases, but not others. That's no, what that, it is.
There's not consistency there. There's two different instances. Public accommodations is different from the First Amendment law.
What if
equal treatment under the law? What is that? 14th, 13th Amendment? That's 14th, I think.
So you're saying that's none of the Islamists who are behind the BDS movement, none, they're not anti-Semitic at all. They love the Jews. They love the Jews.
Look, if it was anti-Semitism, they wouldn't be covered. That's my point. The BDS law is not talking about anti-Semitism. My point is,
no, I know it's not.
If you simply say, I'm doing it because I'm anti-Semitic, well, then certainly you can do. See,
so what you learn to do is not say that.
My point is,
you understand that, right, Garland? That if that's the law, then what they will do is simply not say that. Are you saying that there's not anti-Semitism behind a lot of this BDS stuff?
I'm saying it's not related to this law. It still violates the First Amendment. I don't care what's behind it.
Well, no, if it violates the First
Amendment. It's thought crimes. It's thought police.
And that is exactly the argument. And by the way, I got to say something. I'm a Christian. And I would tell people to bake the cake. I personally don't care about that. I personally don't think that. I think what you do is you bake the cake and you let God work it out. That's what I believe. I believe it's not up to me as a Christian.
If God's going to send you to hell for baking a cake, he ain't a real fair guy in the first place.
No, he's not going to send. That's the point. He's not. And therefore, I could extend it. That being said, I don't feel like making that decision for other people. And furthermore, if somebody doesn't want to bake a cake for you, go get a cake somewhere else. You know, I don't know if you know this. It's easy to get a cake. And my point is, just be consistent. Just be consistent.
I am consistent.
If you want, no, you're not
consistent.
You're
bringing up apples and oranges. You're talking First Amendment and 14th Amendment.
Because they don't fit what you're saying.
No, they're actually exactly the same thing.
If someone's conscience, if a neo-Nazi doesn't want to bake a cake for someone who's Jewish, If the KKK opens the bakery, first off, would you be going? Because I don't think that's a great idea.
No, I'm not going to the KKK bakery.
Right. You're not going to go to the KKK bakery. That's right. And the fact is, and by the way, I mean, if Bobby Seale from the Black Panthers opened a barbecue place, I would go because I love barbecue and he knows quite a bit about it. So my politics, I drink Starbucks. I don't like Starbucks politics. I shop at Amazon. I'm not, you know what you just made my point. I don't have a boycott mentality.
And you know what?
But my point is, if other people decide, guess what, Lee?
But if you decide tomorrow that you don't like Starbucks policies and you're going to, and you know what? And you put up a website, all conservatives, choose the company. Starbucks is run by a raging liberal progressive or whatever. Don't go there. You're fine. If you do it against Israel, you're going to jail for 20 years.
Here's what I don't get.
You can do it to anybody but Israel.
If a gay couple does not want to go to Chick-fil-A, they can't be fined for that. But if a straight couple who are Christians wants to essentially not do business, because that's what we're talking about. Let's forget anything else. It's a business. It's a voluntary relationship. If the Christians want to not have a voluntary business relationship with the gay couple, they'll be fined $1 million and they'll be made a pariah. And that is
inconsistent. You know how many gay people are boycotting Chick-fil-A? A lot of them.
Exactly.
And how many
of them
are going to jail? Do you think they should go to jail for it, Garland?
My point is, it's inconsistent.
Do you think they should go to jail for it? I'm actually
in favor of people having voluntary relationships, whether other people like them or don't.
Well, I think, so let me put the question on you. Do you think Congress should pass a law that's going to send people to jail because they determine they want to boycott, not because they want to boycott Israel, but only if they want to boycott it for certain reasons. You can boycott it for other reasons, but only certain reasons you boycott it. I'll repeat what I've said.
First off, you're not, and the ACLU is not being honest.
That's true. I'm not making that up.
And no, it is not true. It is much narrower than that. It's about certain things. And it's already statutory. Now, even that being said, I said kinda, because I'm not thrilled about that either. I'm actually in favor. I'm consistently in favor of people being able to have voluntary relationships. And by the way, if that voluntary relationship offends me, as it would when someone's racist or someone's has a religious bias. I don't like that. But you know what? That happens all the time. But I'm consistent about it. And I'm what I think is I don't
You're
want.
You're saying kind of. There's no consistent in saying kind of.
No, there is.
You shouldn't be kind of in. Well, because what do you think of the First Amendment? Do you like the First Amendment?
Because you're
misstating. Kind of like the First Amendment.
You're misstating what the actual law is.
No, I'm not. In fact, you could get in trouble for even a business or a business owner can get in trouble for requesting information. And that's in the law.
Requesting information about the BDS. What information?
Requesting information about it. Any information. Yes, it is.
No, it is not accurate.
Yes, it is. Absolutely accurate.
You come back and you read me the statute. It is not accurate.
Apparently,
for requesting information about something that is not accurate.
Well, I'm glad we're having this conversation.
No, it's going along with an
because people who are listening.
I'm reading what the law says.
Don't have to believe. Believe me, they can look it up themselves.
And by the way, let me say something about the ACLU here. Let me say something. The
they're
ACLU.
Right? You want to say that they're right?
No. No, I'm not.
They're right here.
Because they're being dishonest.
But you're admitting
about
that they're right, at least.
Can I say something about the ACLU, Garland? Can I finish saying something?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm going to actually say something nice about them. The ACLU, to their credit, got joined with Terry Jones, who's the Koran-burning preacher from Florida. And the ACLU, I give the ACLU credit a certain percentage of the time. I wish they would do the same thing for the Christian couple who's being harassed and driven into the ground. By the way, I don't see that happening.
Or the gay person?
I don't see that happening
being
to Muslims.
Discriminated
you
against?
Know what? Show me when that happens to a Muslim breaker. Show me when a gay couple
person
goes into a Muslim. No, you just show me that. You show me some up in Dearborn, Michigan. Show me someone up in Dearborn, Michigan. You think those bakeries are doing a lot of business with the gay community? You think so?
All
I don't see
to do
the lawsuits up there.
The ACLU is consistently, unfortunately, you aren't. But the First Amendment is, and so am I. We'll be back for round three of Fault Lines with Nick Sinistranahan.
Fault Lines.
We are back. The third and final segment of today's episode of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, the most disruptive radio show in America. And it's going to be fun to talk about Russia in an actual substantive issue, as opposed to mere accusations, which is what the media does, because this is a real thing here. Vladimir Putin announced that Russia will be expelling 755 U.S. diplomats. And that number takes the staff down. It's parody. Not a parody. Not like a joke. But parody with a T. Parody with the number that the U.S. has. So here's the thing about this. I really do, Garland. I keep scratching my head on this whole U.S.-Russia thing. Here's what's happened. I'll tell you, I talked about this. The entire Trump-Russia story, I was depressed over the weekend because I realized that the Trump-Russia story has gotten to the same point as the Benghazi story for me. And just briefly, everybody gets Benghazi wrong. Everybody gets Benghazi wrong. The Democrats get it wrong because they were covering up who did it. They knew it was Ansar al-Sharia that night. I've done a video about this. I could show you video where it was announced on the Anderson Cooper show that it was Ansar al-Sharia September 11th during the Benghazi attack, completely provable. And then they buried it until after the election when Petraeus brought it out. That's what happened. Now, the right, on the other hand, the right media also gets it wrong. Because the right media, that's what the left media says, oh, it's no big deal. There was no cover-up. Yes, there was a cover-up. You covered up who did it. And the reason they covered up who did it is because Barack Obama said, remember 2012 when he was nominated at the Democratic Convention, he said, we got al-Qaeda on the run. Remember that? Four days later, we're attacked by an al-Qaeda affiliate and our ambassador's killed. So they buried that part of the story. Now, the right gets Benghazi wrong because people on the right typically accept as gospel, well, had nothing to do with the video. No, you're wrong. Provably had to do with the video. I could, again, show people that. Absolutely provably had to do with the video. And I've interviewed Terry Jones about it because he's intimately involved in that because he was one of the people promoting the video. I'm the only journalist. I'm literally the only journalist in the world who interviewed Terry Jones on that. Jack, my son who's doing the Periscope, Jack was there. Right, Jack? You remember that? I interviewed Terry Jones. That video, I'm the only person to interview him. It's got about 3,000 views on YouTube. So my point is, as a journalist, I'm very frustrated with Benghazi because everybody's got the story wrong but me, which sounds weird, but it's true. Now, with this Russia thing, oh my God, it's exactly the same thing happening. We've been talking about how the Democrats have screwed this story up for months. They've painted a false narrative, and they've tried to drive up tensions between the United States and Russia.
That's
and
where
guess
I would
what?
Say you're wrong when you say the Democrats. Because you forget. This is not
I mean,
just
the official
the
Democratic National
yeah.
Party. I don't
yes.
mean you, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right. No,
the Democrats,
no, no, no.
The Democratic
that's not what
National
I mean.
Committee.
That's not what I mean. Keep in mind here, okay, you got a couple things going on here. Certainly, you've got the Clinton people, the Center for American Progress people who are driving the narrative that Hillary didn't win, blah, 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 and that, I mean, didn't lose, that it was really stolen by the Russians, right?
I wish they drive that narrative that Hillary didn't
win. You and I both. But at any rate, but the narrative is also being driven, and I mean, you can go to McCain, you can listen to a lot of Republicans who will kind of go along with the narrative that basically says that, you know, the Russians are a terrible enemy, and push, I'll put it like this, forget what all the things they said, there's a bipartisan movement that wants to kind of push the Cold War.
100%. And I pegged John McCain and the deep state over and over again.
Exactly.
Yes.
And what they 100%. Want to do is to, in my opinion, hinder the current administration from normalizing any relationships with Russia. And they're doing a pretty good job of it, I might add.
Yes.
And that's a big part of it, because when you look at what happened with these sanctions, so for those who don't know, the Obama administration initially initiated some sanctions, and he did a couple of things, basically. Number one, they expelled some diplomats, from Russian diplomats. And number two, they seized two diplomatic compounds, one in New York, one in Maryland. And what those compounds basically
were. And this
was
back, this is December 29th.
Yeah, last year. And
right.
Basically, these were places where people went to, where the Russian diplomats went, they were kind of like on the water for kind of R&R kind of places. So at the most people expected that the Russians would immediately retaliate, which is kind of the norm. And so basically the Russians kind of sat on it for a while and said, well, we're going to wait. We think we can work this thing out. And eventually nothing happened. So finally now the Russians did what they call retaliatory sanctions, which is everybody saw it coming. The other interesting thing about the story is, though, and that is the Russian foreign ministers and some Russian spokesmen have spoken, because there have been additional sanctions placed on the Russians in the last week or so that's been going through Congress. And they're passed like, you know, 92-3 or something crazy like that. And really high. And basically numbers that veto-proof numbers.
That's right.
And the Russians are starting to say there could be sanctions. If you guys do more sanctions, we could do. So it's kind of like a little sanctions war going on. And additionally, I got to add this. This is additional and this is important. A lot of people don't know this. In the Russia sanctions, one of the things that's there, and you know, the Ukraine always comes up. Part of the Russia sanctions, there is a pipeline that runs through the Ukraine. It runs from Russia to Northern Europe that carries gas. The Ukrainians make about $2 billion a year because that pipeline runs through the Ukraine. There is a pipeline being built to bypass Ukraine from Russia to Northern Europe. So the Ukrainians won't get any that $2 billion anymore. One of the things these new Russian sanctions do, and I don't think it's by accident, is try to stop this pipeline. And one of the problems that the EU, the European Union has is the sanctioning is going to hurt German and Austrian and Norwegian companies who have like billions sunk into this pipeline. So, of course, the Ukraine is in there. So I think there's more to this than meets the eye.
Well, so this is what I was getting. This is, and by the way, that's clearly a payoff to the Ukrainian government. I mean, I don't want us to say it. It's clearly like, hey, we're going to protect you on this pipeline issue because thanks for letting us use you to interfere with the election, which is what the DNC provably did when the Ukraine released information on the secret ledger Manafort was in. We've talked about that issue. Here's what worries me. I see the Republicans, and this goes back to what I said about Benghazi. My thing is nobody gets it right. Nobody's getting it right. So the fact that sanctions bill passed by a huge margin means that both the establishment Republicans, not just McCain, But everyone has been cowed into this BS. And nobody wants to actually look at the facts of the story here and ask, why are we at war with Russia again? Like, why are we saber rattling? Oh, it's over Crimea, right? Oh, it's over Crimea. No, not really. Because again, it's very easy for anybody to look at. I'm not sure what Russia was supposed to do there. The people of the Crimea voted in 2014 by a huge margin.
I think like 93%.
Something over 90% to secede from Ukraine. So what was going on was the Ukraine clearly has a split. There were some people, you could see this in the Euromaidan protest in Kiev. Some people wanted to go with Europe and some people wanted to go with Russia. That's the reality. Why did that happen? And part of the reason it happened is because the Soviet Union broke up 20 years earlier and it was kind of messy. And by the way, the United States did play a role in keeping it messy, because we helped and put Yeltsin in power there, but whatever. I'm not even criticizing that. I'm just saying realistically, that's what happened. Some people in Ukraine wanted to go one way. The other people wanted to go the other way. Now, I would really object to what Russia was doing there. If they took people who wanted to go with Europe and said, no, you're going to come with us. Otherwise, when people of this section of the Ukraine say, well, you know what? We want to be with Russia. Okay. They want to be with Russia. And it's not, like I say, not a close vote.
No, it was
either.
Over 90%.
Well, not a close vote. So I keep looking at this going, well, wait, where's the problem? Here's the other thing about this. How many times in terms of this Russia narrative have we found out? We found out about it with General Flynn. We found out about it with other stuff that basically it says in the newspaper articles, U.S. intelligence learned this through routine surveillance of the Russian ambassador and foreign ministers. In other words, the U.S. is spying on the Russians. Now, again, I'm not saying, well, gee, oh my gosh, we're spying on them. I'm saying countries spy on each other. Israel, we talked about Israel last thing. I'm a supporter of Israel broadly. That being said, Israel spied on us.
Who was the guy? Was it Pollard?
Exactly right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is countries, we spy on China. China spies on us.
Yeah.
We spy on our allies. We remember.
Merkel?
Merkel, exactly right.
Bugged her room or phone or something like that. It's
exactly right. And so I'm saying, can we stop being children? Now, it's not us who's children. It's the media. Who treats us like children?
Well, here's the thing about it. You know, look, here's the way I feel about that. You have, the party that I belong to, you know, that I have a tenuous grip, that has a tenuous grip on my ideology at best. Ask for a special counsel. And they got a special counsel. And at that point, you got things to do. And one of them isn't the BDS legislation, I might add. But you got things to do. Why not do things? But I turn on the TV. I don't watch Rachel Maddow anymore. I turn on Rachel Maddow, and I feel like I'm watching the conspiracy theory show. Because Rachel Maddow is literally saying, she's absolutely implying clearly that not only was Donald Trump put in by Putin, right? But that Putin, he's still, that this is an, and she used these words, ongoing operation. That now, I guess there's a phone or something, and Putin's calling Trump every day saying, now do this, and Trump's saying, yes, sir. You know,
well, that's what she's saying.
Yeah, exactly. She's literally saying that. And to me, it's just so over the top.
Well, it's not even over the top. It's not even close to reality. So let's talk about Mike Pence. I mentioned we talked about Mike Pence a little bit in the first segment.
And I got a problem with that stuff. Let me just say this. And people, what the media, I'll end up with this. What the media is, you don't see in the media is what I call the Bernie people, what I call the progressives, really are buying it. Oh, the progressives are actually angry about the Russia trope. The progressives are saying to the Democratic Party, look, man, why don't you guys get to policy? We feel like you're making excuses. You're blaming us. You're blaming everybody.
But look at what's actually being said. So Mike Pence came out in the last day or two and said, well, Russia basically says that they had it coming and that, you know, we don't want things to be bad with Russia, but they need to change their actions on a few things. So let's go over that. Let's talk about that. This is what the Trump, and here's what I'm saying. You're saying the Bernie supporters don't like it. I'm saying I'm a Trump supporter. And what Mike Pence is saying is not what I voted for.
Right.
As a Trump supporter, it's not what I voted for. First off, what are we saying Russia has to do? Well, they're saying they have to stop support for Bashar al-Assad. You know what? No, 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 no. That was an Obama-Clinton policy that I opposed. Now, suddenly, it's become Mike Pence is up there yapping about it, and Mike Pence is saying this is the Trump policy. I never voted for that. That's not what I voted for. That's not what I believe. I believe that Bashar al-Assad is the best option in Syria.
The best worst option, right?
As they say. Whatever. I don't even want to say the best worst option. Someone, every time this comes up, I say to people, name a better option.
That's what Macron said. In basically in France, Macron said the same thing. He said, look, you know, I ain't in love with him, but with Assad. However, I don't see a better option, and it's not a condition of, to make this thing end. It's not a condition that Assad has to go. My understanding from the Trump administration was that they were taking that position, that they weren't saying that Assad. I have not heard that regime change in Syria was the official position of the Trump administration, but Mike Pence.
Until after he got elected.
Right. Well, have you really heard it? I haven't heard that from the Trump administration lately.
They've been making those noises.
Yeah.
And let me say this, though, too. In his defense, if Macron had said, I'm in love with Bashar al-Assad, if that's the way he'd started the sentence, that would have made headlines. I'm just saying he's French, though, so who knows? He could go really either way. Plus, his wife was 108 years old. But let's leave that aside for a second because we don't want to get personal. Thank God. Does he speak English? I think he may speak a little English.
Let's hope not. And let's
Macron's
hope he's not listening to this show, Lee, because he's really angry at you.
but here's the thing. So Pence said, well, Russia has to change their policy. No, what do they have to change? What else do they have to change their policy on? Crimea, right? I covered that already. I don't know what Russia's supposed to do. I think what they're supposed to do is go, well, no, tough noogies. And is that a Russian word? I'm not sure. But tough noogies.
It's French.
We don't care.
Uses it all the time, I'm sure.
Noogies.
Yeah, there you go.
But I don't know what they're supposed to do in that situation, but we've suddenly made it like this is what we need. So in other words, what Pence is saying is if Russia tells the people of Crimea, no, 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 forget your vote. No.
We're out of here.
If they do the Saudis bidding, I don't know else to do. Say it. If the Russians stop backing Bashar al-Assad, what we're going to get in Syria, listen to me, is a failed state. It's going to be Libya. And by the way, that's exactly what the Saudis want. They want another failed state. They don't want. See, the reason there's no answer to, well, who would be better, is they don't want an answer.
They
actually just want a failed state because a failed state can't produce oil, can't.
If it's a failed state, you can go in, you can get the oil, and you can protect the oil rigs. You know, the rest of the country can go to crap, but you can protect the oil rigs. But the bottom line is this. It sounds to me like what Mike Pence is doing is he is endorsing what the neocons want, which is what I oppose. It all comes down to this.
It sounds like Mike Pence is watching Rachel Maddow. Yeah. That's what it sounds
like
to me.
It comes down to this. I oppose the neocon philosophy of regime change. That whole philosophy that says, look, whatever Assad is, that's their country. The idea that we're supposed to go in from country to country and determine who should be there and say, well, that's a bad guy. We'll take him out. Because the fact of the matter is when you do that, you end up with something worse,
but
particularly
see,
in that part of the country.
I understand that's your principle.
Madness.
I'm a little more practical. Here's what I'm saying. Pretend for a second, Garland, that you're in favor of regime change. Just pretend. Go with it. Explain to me what's going to happen after you change that regime and get rid of Assad. So, in other words, my point is, you can make, I know what you're saying. I'm not trying to talk you out of your principles. I'm saying, pretend those aren't your principles,
right,
and it's still a disaster. That's my point. Is there some regimes, because this is what we've gotten into, like in North Korea, your thing is, well, I'm opposed to regime change. My thing is, I don't know, that I think they could do better. I can easily imagine a better result for the people in North Korea than their current ruler. Syria, I literally can't. I just go, you know, I'm not saying, again, I think what should happen is the U.S. should get in and ally with Russia on Syria And both of them say, I'm going to go a little Bill Murray here, but say, Bashar al-Assad, you big knucklehead. We're going to support you staying in there, but stop torturing your people. Here's the bottom line. That's what they should tell them.
By
the way, if the U.S. and Russia both did that, you don't think Bashar al-Assad would do that? Because he would.
Of course. And here's the bottom line. If you look at what has happened with the regime change, right, with the countries where we have been a part of regime change, what you have is a destabilized society where these, you know, the Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Al-Nusra Front, you name it, they come in now and they can do whatever they want to and they can have their camp. So the bottom line is the best thing for everybody, including the people of those countries, is as stable a society and as stable a government as you can get it. We found that the one thing that's dangerous to the entire world and that region in the entire world is an unstable country with no government. And when you remove the leader, there is never a guarantee. In fact, you can argue there is a guarantee of instability.
Except what's happened is some people have realized, and the Saudis are a perfect example. And here's reality. The people in the deep state, what do I mean by the deep state? It's the persistent, I like the term persistent state better than deep state because I think it clarifies it. Whether a Democrat or a Republican's in the White House, it's a lot of the same people in the CIA and the NSA. And by the way, again,
military
I don't
military intelligence. There's a bunch
and
of
FBI
intelligence
and stuff like that. It's the people who and the military, quite frankly, who are there, whether a Democrat's there or the Republican's there. They're the persistent state. They're the state that stays in. And you know what? They have their own agenda, and it's not necessarily that of the American people.
By saying this, and then people always say, well, they always get it wrong. No, they don't get it wrong. They know they're wrong when they say it, but they don't want you to know they're wrong. We will be back tomorrow. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.